My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic member of the South Dixie Group in Miami, Florida. It's good to see the usual suspects here. Good to see you guys. So let's see whether we can do something around step nine. We'll don't hold me to it. I don't like pressure. Don't put pressure on me. We'll do something here. At least nobody will drink for an hour. You know, at these prices, don't expect too much from me. I haven't found enough to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. And there's a great saying by T.S. Lewis in the Four Quatrains. He says, we will not cease our exploration. We will not cease our exploration. At the end of all our exploring, we will come to the place where we started, having known the place for the first time. I put I actually put the secret of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's probably several secrets. There are actually several secrets in Alcoholics Anonymous that people don't really find out about until they have 30, 40 years. So I've disclosed one of the secrets to give you guys a heads up, you know. You know, one of the things it says in Alcoholics Anonymous in the 12 and 12, it says, unless and until we know that no good can come to any alcoholic, no good. You know, that almost sounds like, you know, that part in the book where it says half measures avail you nothing. Yeah. You ever hear that part? You know, let me consider this. There is a possibility that there's stuff actually said in the big book out in the open, not secret. I mean, stuff right out in the open that people read every single day and they don't understand what they're reading. Do you think that's possible? Do you think that you could read a line, a simple line in the big book and hear it and it sounds good and you think you understand it, but you don't understand it at all? Think it's possible to read a line in the big book and think you understand it and then 20 years later, after 20 years of experience and working with people, working yourself, all of a sudden see it for the first time? That's what T.S. Lewis said. It says, at the end of all our exploring, we will come to the place where we began, having known the place for the first time. You know, a lot of this stuff that I know today, and I'm not saying I know everything. I mean, I'm just like at square zero. I'm barely scratching the surface. But a lot of things I see today after 40 years of working this thing and working with other alcoholics, I sort of see in the rearview mirrors. You know, my first sponsor used to say, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. What do you think? You know, I think that's maybe true. Sometimes, what's that saying going on around AA? There's some sort of saying in AA, the guy who's the most sober is the guy who got up earliest in the morning or something like that. You ever hear that saying? I can't remember what it is. It's like 40 years doesn't mean shit. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, whoever got, I happened to get up at 3:30 in the morning this morning, but you know, there's something to do. There is a reason. For 800 years, the Jews were kept captive by the Egyptians as slaves. And God, if you read the Bible, if you believe in this stuff, sent Moses down, an unlikely character. There's a whole story about that. Appeared in Bernie Bush, sent him down there to talk to Pharaoh to get the slaves out of Egypt. And he finally relented after all the plagues and everything. And so they were going out of Egypt. Some of you guys may have, did you hear this story? It was in all the papers. Maybe you saw the movie. It was a movie. In any event, so, and then they followed something called the Shekinah cloud. What happened is the Jews, like 3 million of them, came out of Egypt and they were going to the promised land. You with me? The promised land. Now, let me tell you the deal on this. Now, you need to listen to this because this has a lot to do. If you understand this, this has a lot to do with your alcoholism. Because all alcoholism is it's slavery. That's all it is. It's just slavery. You're a slave, not only to alcohol. You're not only a slave to alcohol because alcohol is just a symptom. You're a slave to a way of life. This is going to lead you to the promised land, to the promises. The ones that get it are those who that are able to develop a way of living that demands rigorous honesty. Don't bother worrying about that. You don't know what that is, but I mean, trust me, you have no clue. You only think you know what it is. You're going to know a new happiness. Don't even worry about that. You don't even know what that is. You know why? Because it's new. It's not like the old happiness when you got a car, you got laid, or whatever that deal was with you. You got laid, you got drunk, whatever the hell it is. That's an old happiness. You're going to know a new happiness. So you know what I mean? And so the bottom line is, it says the people that cannot get it are those who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. You know what and we don't know who they are. Well, I know this. This is what they see in the big book. They say they seem to be born that way. I can't help it if you don't like that. There are some people that are just of a certain way that they're just never going to get this. It's going to happen. You're going to run into them. They might even stay sober for 25, 30 years. They're not going to get it. They're not going to get to the promised land. They're not going to get to the promised land. That's all I can tell. They'll get everything except the promises. They'll get everything. They'll join the not drinking club. They'll be able to pick up a 50-year medallion, say, I haven't had a drink in 50 years. And they'll be as lonely and as dry as they were when they walked in the door. You know what I mean? I mean, that's just the way that, I don't know. I can't tell you. All I know is there's some step called the sixth step that separates the men from the boys. I don't know. I'm just going by the, listen, don't blame me. I'm just reading the material. There's some step that separates the men from the boys. And it says, what it says in this step is it says that the men or the women, don't accuse me of being sexist. I got enough of that from my daughters. You know what I mean? Three daughters. I mean, it's unbelievable. The abuse I take, but the bottom line, I don't want to go into that, but the bottom line is this, what the book says is it says the men or the women are those who repeatedly try these things so they can grow in the image and likeness of their creator. These are people that have made their creator the central part of their lives. These are people that have become convinced that God lives in their hearts and minds in a way which is indeed miraculous. These are people that at the end of chapter is Gnostics and say, God, either he is or he isn't, what's your decision going to be? They've decided for God. They've decided for God. They've decided for God. Did you know, by the way, this ain't Well People's Anonymous, this fellowship. Did you know that there are people in AA that may never decide? There are people in AA that have many years of sobriety that have never decided for God. Do you know that there's a chapter in the big book that says chapter to the agnostics? And it's a chapter written specifically to the agnostics and atheists. And let me tell you a little secret. It doesn't encourage being an atheist or an agnostic. Doesn't encourage that. Doesn't encourage. I'm serious. As a matter of fact, what it says if a mere code of morals. You ever hear, how about this? I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. It just happens. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but it just happens. So I can't help it. So here's the deal. You know, and I did this sometimes because sometimes you got to fake it until you make it. Okay, you ever heard the term good orderly direction? How many of you have heard, raise your hand if you've heard good orderly direction. People use that in place of God, right? That's the way they use it. They say good orderly direction, and they think that that's what the big book is talking about, right? You get it? Good orderly direction? You don't have to be too bright on this. G-O-D. Good orderly direction. So they say that's like God. But you see, let me suggest something to you. See, one thing you got to understand about alcoholics is we're delusional. You know what it means to be delusional? It means our alcoholic life seems normal. It means, Carl Menninger said, alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. Hey, we hate each other. You know what? We're rationalizers. We tell ourselves rational lies. We lie to ourselves. We tell ourselves we don't give a shit what other people think about us. And our whole lives are devoted to worrying about what people think about us. And so what happens is we have this book that says God either is or it isn't. What's your decision going to be? We have this book that says if a mere, now listen to this. This is, don't blame me. Just tell them to rip up the big book. It says if a mere code of morals, now you guys, You guys all understand English, right? You know, I'm an attorney, so I'm a wordsmith. Now, listen, I'm not making this thing up. Look, there's nothing up my sleeves. I got short sleeves. I'm in Miami. I'm not. This isn't a trick. Listen to this. We're going to do this slow. We're going to go through the big book slowly, almost like BYOC. They go through slowly. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life would have worked for us, we would have been sober a long time ago. But such codes and morals did not work. Are you guys, nod your head if you're getting this. Did not work. Therefore, because they did not work, we have to talk about God. And right after that, the next line is, here's where alcoholics with the hackles in their neck stand up, which I've been told means they get pissed off. You've probably seen it meaning it's alcoholics get pissed off. You ever see alcoholics at meetings get pissed off at God? They try to use every other word, higher power, banana, whatever the hell it is. You know what it means? When an alcoholic gets pissed off about God, what he's really trying to say is, I want to show you what my disease looks like. When he says, I'm spiritual, not religious, that's an alcoholic's way of saying he's got a higher form. Alcoholics who don't like to be self-righteous, what he's really saying is, I am better than religious people. I am much better because I am spiritual. I am a spiritual person. That's pretty much bullshit, by the way. There's no alcoholic that's spiritual. If we were spiritual, we wouldn't be here. You know what I mean? We'd be down at the airport with a tambourine, you know? Alcoholics are material people. All we care about is getting laid, getting money, getting the car, getting this. That's why you go through 20 years of bullshit worrying about all that stuff, because the worldly clamors will kill you, because all you think about is the shit you need to have in order to be okay so you can blast out of this freaking place. You know what I mean? Yeah, believe me, if you're an alcoholic, you're not. I said to my sponsor, I don't want to hold hands and say the Lord's Prayer because I don't want to be a hypocrite. He said, too late. By the time you become alcoholic, you've busted, hypocrite. You've busted through that sucker, you know? So it says, if a mere code of morals and a better philosophy of life would have helped us, we'd be sober. Now, listen, let me explain this to you. You guys look pretty bright to me. You know, I'm like, listen, good orderly direction is a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life. You get this? Listen to me. Do the next right thing. It's a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life. The Ten Commandments is a mere code of morals. We couldn't do that. We couldn't do that. The Ten Commandments thing. You ain't going to be able to do the other thing. Trust me. You're not. You know, there's going to come a time where you should give back the money. You're going to figure out how you don't have to give back the money. There's a come a time where you should make an apology. You're going to figure out where you really don't have to make an apology. There's a come a time where you're going to say, I really shouldn't send this email. You're going to send that sucker. There's this come a time where you should shut your fucking mouth and you're going to say something real stupid and rip somebody's heart out. You know why? Because your problem centers in your mind, not your body. You could stop drinking, but you can't stop thinking. And you want to know how you think? You think selfishly because you're selfish. In other words, it says you're selfish and you're self-centered and you're driven. Driven means it's not like a free choice. You can't help but fuck up because you know why? Because now here we get to the secret. The first secret in Alcoholics Anonymous that nobody knows because it's not in Anthony. It's not in the first 164 pages. That's why you guys don't even teach it, but maybe you'll start doing it now. This is the first secret that you need to know that most newcomers, by newcomer, I mean first 10 years, don't understand. And it's right up here. I put it in the chat twice because I know that people. Here's the first secret in Alcoholics Anonymous. Many do not comprehend. Many that do not comprehend. This is in the forward to the first edition that the alcoholic is a very sick person. Many do. So in other words, if you're an alcoholic, you are very, very, very sick. And your sickness centers in your mind, not your body. Has nothing to do with the alcohol. The alcohol is a symptom of your craziness. It's a symptom. Once you stop drinking the alcohol, you're still a very sick person because because you're selfish and you're self-centered. This has nothing to do with drinking. Let me tell you something. I was the biggest asshole, the biggest selfish guy, thinking about myself, hurting people, when I was sober. I hurt people's feelings. I disappointed people when I was sober. You know, when I was a nice guy, when I felt good, when I was drunk, that's why I drank. I drank because no woman, no car, no amount of money, no nothing ever worked quite as good and quite as well and quite as fast as just a few drinks. And so I drank it. And then it stopped working for me. And I thought the problem was booze because all these problems happened. I stopped working. And now all of a sudden, I'm back to square one. Square one is I'm an if only or and a yes butter. If I only had that girl, I'd be okay. If I only had that car, I'd be okay. If I only had that money, I'd be okay. If I only had that job, I'd be okay. Running around the planet Earth, looking for the worldly clamors, looking for the things that'll make me feel okay. And I put them into my life and I'd be okay for what? A week, a month, 1 year. And then all of a sudden I'd leave that wife and the kid. And then all of a sudden the marriage wasn't working because she didn't appreciate me. And then all of a sudden I needed a new job because because the boss didn't appreciate me. And all of a sudden I needed a new car because this car was crap. It was a used car. And all of a sudden I thought, why can't people do what I want them to do? Why won't they do it my way? Because if only they would do it my way, it'd be okay. And the real problem is I was a banana. I was crazy. I was nuts. I was insane. Insane. That's second step. That's exactly right, Anthony. That's what I was. A banana. Okay? Insane. You understand? And the problem was, that's why I have to start coming to believe that it's a power that's going to restore me to sanity. I got to be restored to sanity. Now I've got 40 years. I'm thinking maybe by next Tuesday, it may happen. There's a possibility. Probably not, you know, and I'm a very sick person. And the problem is unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious. And one of the consequences of being an alcoholic, is you don't realize how sick you are. You don't, because it says we're delusional. It says, this is what it says, we're selfish, self-centered, we're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. To us, our alcoholic life, the way we think usually seems comfortable for us. We don't have to go to meetings to live a dishonest life. I don't have to go to meetings to just think only about myself. I don't need a sponsor to tell me just think only about myself. I think only about myself and give a shit only about myself and worry about myself naturally. That's my natural way of being because I'm material and I'm selfish and I'm delusional. We step into those and they retell seemingly without provocation, but we see that we make decisions based upon self. I don't sit there and say, I'm not going to show up because I only give a shit about myself. I don't say I'm not going to pay back the money because I only give a shit about myself. I don't say I'm going to rip this gal's heart out and I'm going to say something to her and she's going to be sorry she screwed around with me because I don't give a shit about because I only give a shit about myself. I just do it thinking I'm doing the right thing because that's just how sick I am, because many don't comprehend, especially alcoholics, that if you're an alcoholic, you're a very sick person. You know, you're a very sick. And now the way alcohol works is I drink alcohol. And let me tell you something, bam, immediately, I feel great. Two fast shots, hey, I'm together. You know what I mean? Sobriety, you know, you may have to go to 50 A meetings to get the same feeling like one jigger of scotch gives you. You know what I mean? It's a longer deal. The slavery, the bondage, to the thinking. Alcoholics are self-will run riot. All we want to do is think about ourselves. We're going 1,000 miles per hour. We're self-will run riot. Though, here's the key, we don't think so. We don't think so because most don't comprehend that an alcoholic is a very sick person. We just think we have a bad drinking problem. We don't think we're... It says we've made decisions based upon self, puts us in a position to be heard. So above everything, we must get rid of the selfishness. You can get rid of the drinking. How do you get rid of the selfishness? I mean, I came in when I was 31 years old. I've been selfish and self-centered for 31 years. Intensely. Industrial strength, selfish and self-centered. Walking out on a wife and kid because I wanted to go out with other women, telling myself we were just growing in different directions. We were different people. you know, no integrity, you know, hurting other people right, left, and sideways, telling myself I'm a good guy, doing selfish things. 31 years. Half measures avail you nothing. There's no middle of the road solution. I'm a middle of the road kind of guy. Unless you get rid of your old ideas, and I don't even know what my old fucking ideas are. The result is nil. And I don't believe that because I believe half measures avail you 50%. And I'm satisfied with 50%. Now, of course, the sixth step says, if you're one of the men, you're trying to grow in the image and likeness of God, of your creator, okay, which is perfection. You're trying to do that thing. But they say most alcoholics won't do it because they want to do what they want to do. Read the sixth step is they want to settle. They want to settle. They want to say, get off my back. I've been to me. Get off my back. I'm not drinking. I'm not even trying. I'm not even thinking about drinking. Get off my back. Get off. They don't want any extra credit. Yeah, I know they encourage church membership because they say above everything, we must get rid of this alcoholism. We much rather it kills us. God makes that possible. Getting closer to God makes that possible. Improving your conscious contact with God makes that possible. You know, let God be the central factor of your life. It'll protect you from worldly clamors. It'll you'll grow. You'll have that profound psychic personality change where ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were the guiding force of your life, will be shoved to one side. And you will be dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, and attitude. You might even get to the point where you don't have a bucket list. You don't wake up with the if only. The only thing you basically become addicted to do is maybe go to AA meetings and look for people to help. Which may sound like a bad addiction, but it's actually a good addiction because there's no deleterious consequences. What happens is when your whole life turns into trying to help other people, and trust me, you'll never run out of people to help. Because treat people like they have a broken heart, because most of them do, and they're lonely. And when you get to the point where the only thing you're interested in is sharing this thing, trying to carry this message, having a spiritual awakening, so your whole life is devoting to trying to carry this message, when you honestly understand that you make a decision for God, okay? Like it says in the big book, it says making a sincere decision, then all sorts of remarkable things will happen because being all powerful, he will give you everything you need if you stay close to him and perform his work well. And guess what his work is? Guess what your job is? To be of maximum service to other people. So when you get to that point where you're obsessed with trying to help other people and carry God's message into other people's life to free them from being slaves, when that happens to you, you know what I mean? You won't be an if only or an yes butter and worrying about whether you're going to get laid or you have a boyfriend, a girlfriend, or romance, or all that other shit that they say we base our life on that kills us in the sixth step. What does it say? Money, property, romance, all that crap. You know? Which is precisely by the way, everything I'm telling you, the fellowship doesn't like it. Doesn't mean I'm down on the fellowship. I like the fellowship, but it ain't Well People's Anonymous. Remember, there's a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the program, and then there's a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous made up of a lot of people that would rather not do it, that want to do as little as possible, to go to as few meetings as possible. They don't want to get crazy or jump in the deep end of the pool. They want to do as little as possible and stay sober and stay from the drink and be relatively okay. They ain't interested in the extra credit stuff. So in the big book, when they say we encourage, when the founders say we're on a new basis, the basis of trusting, relying upon God, we never apologize for God. We have no prejudice against religion, even organized religion. We begin to see where they're right, and we try to adopt those things. We encourage church membership. Most of us are members of church, but it's not obligatory. You understand? You don't have to do it because we know that'll scare the shit out of you because you really don't want to because the hackles in your neck going up. But we all do it and we encourage it. We never apologize for it. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. They let him demonstrate in their lives what he can be. At once, we outgrow fear. By the way, that's not from me. That's actually in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You may have either skipped over it or maybe you didn't realize exactly what they were trying to tell you the program was about. Don't do this. Listen, don't you do this in an AA meeting. I'm a professional. you know, I can do this and get away with it. You know what I'm talking about? Don't you try it. You'll get the shit slammed out of you. You understand what I'm saying? But I want to tell you, just understand, most people, the way they work a program is they do everything they're supposed to do, except the stuff they don't want to do. But if you want to get, if you want to get past the not drinking club and get into the rocket in the fourth dimension club, if you want to do that stuff, you may find yourself having to do the extra credit stuff, do the stuff that the founders did. They're, why would they put that shit in the, listen, if it's not obligatory, think about this. If it's not obligatory, and I know it pisses off alcoholics, why do you think Bill Wilson and those guys put, even put in the big book, we encourage church membership? Now, listen to me. If it's not obligatory and they know it would piss you off, why do they put in the big book, we encourage church membership? You know why? I got the answer for you. Because that's what they did. Because that's what they did. You know that part of the big book? You ever read that part where it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path? It doesn't say do whatever the hell you want to do, does it? It says that's what they did. This is advanced AA, you know, and you can report me, you know, if you want, you know, if it's bothering you. In any event, so the Jews come out of, where were we? We're at the Jews. They come out of Egypt. They're slaves, just like we're slaves to alcoholism. We're slaves in our mind. It's a 3-week walk to the promised land. You understand? Maybe four, maybe a month. Okay, give them three months. They stop at an 8 days in or whatever it is, whatever it is. 3 million people, they walk over the promised land, but they're following God. They're following God. They're following, if you read the Bible, they're following God. You know, and 40 years later, 40 years later, you know why it took the Jews 40 years? You know why God led them around to the desert for 40 years? Because at you know how, because by the time they got, God got them to the promised land, all the slaves that were brought up in Egypt, they were all dead except for a few people. That slave mentality was gone. After 40 years of going through the desert, going through the hard times and trusting in God, that slave mentality was gone. And the guys that were going in the promised land had never known slavery. They were born in the desert, man. They were ready to rip, rape, and run, man. They were there. They were, man, they were focused on God. God was on their side. They were ready. So I just want to let you know, you're going to be fine in about 40 years. It's going to work out for you. That slave mentality, it's going to be over. Listen, actually, if you're really into this thing, thank you, William. I appreciate it. If you're really into this thing, that should make you feel good. Because if you got 10 or 15 years and you're thinking you're a loser and things aren't going okay and you want to kill yourself because you're discouraged, you know what I mean? You'll say, holy shit, maybe it's not so bad. Maybe I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be, trudging around in the Sinai. You know what I mean? You know, trudging around, but I'm following the right God. I'm following God. I'm going to these meetings. I'm not drinking. It's getting better. I get a little taste. He does give you a little taste, doesn't he? So here's the deal. So I should mention something about the ninth step, don't you think? So in the so here's the deal. I just put this in chat. So in Dr. Bob, the Good Old Timers, if any of you guys ever want to go, you know how alcoholics say, I really want this thing? You ever hear an alcoholic say, I really want to do this thing? You know, 80% of that is bullshit. But the point is, they really want to do it until you tell them to do it, and then they don't want to do it. So if you really want to do this thing, let me point something out to you so you can connect some dots, okay? And by the way, nothing I'm saying is obligatory. I'm not getting paid. I'm just telling you this is what it was like for me. This is what happened. This is what I found. If you want what I have, you may want to do it. You don't have to. You know, it's in the book. I'm giving you all the authority. You can say, forget it. That's his way of doing things. I got my way. I don't care. It's not my life. You know, listen, this is not a dress rehearsal. You got one life, guys. You know, this is your life. You get to be 80 years old. You don't get this thing. You missed it. You say, oh, shit, I should have done that deal. I should have listened to that guy. You know, too late. You know, so sorry. So the bottom line is, but I'm telling you, you're not going to be able to say nobody told me this stuff. You're not 10 years from now when you're a thumb-sucking crybaby and you fight, you're not going to be able to say, gee, I only wish somebody would have told me this shit. You know what I mean? You know, because I'm telling you. So in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, and I'm giving you the sites, the references, this is what they say. This is the exact thing they say. I think it's verbatim. They say, the books we found, this is in the first 4 years, you know, AA was started in 1935. No, it started in 1935. The big book, Rarely Ever Seen in Person Fail, is Thoroughly Followed Our Path, written in 1939, published in 39. Between 35 and 39, where they say, Rarely Ever Seen in Person Fail, is Thoroughly Followed Our Path, the one thing they weren't doing is they weren't reading the big book. Now, if you don't understand that, that's going to require a lot more time than this meeting has to offer. But trust me, the things that they were doing were not reading the big book. They were doing other things, and they were reading other books. And what it says in Dr. Bob in the Good Old Times, it says the books we found absolutely essential. Does anybody understand what the word essential means? So listen, whatever essential means, which I think means essential, absolutely essential means like really freaking essential. You know what I'm talking about? Like absolutely essential. The books they found absolutely essential were 1 Corinthians 13. You ought to check it out. You know, if you're interested in doing what they did. Sermon on the Mount and the Book of James. We were almost called the James Club. You with me? Now, if you ever start getting into reading scripture, which I did in my 11th year because I wanted more. I was stuck. I reached that glass ceiling. I don't know how many people have, I know there are people in here because I know a little of the stories of a lot of these people. I know there are people that have gotten to 23 years, to 30 years, to 20 years, to 15 years, and they reach that glass ceiling where they're going to meetings and they're not drinking, but they're not happy with their sobriety. You know, the big book talks about there, here and there, an alcoholic dry at the moment says, feel better, look better, have a better time. We laugh at such Sally. We know he's going to try the old game again because he's not happy with his sobriety. Soon he'll know loneliness as few do. He'll be at the jumping off place. There are reasons why people drink after 15, 20, 30 years and that kind of stuff happens. The reason is not because they're thirsty for alcohol. It's because they're thirsty for relief from this crummy ass life because life is crapshoot to them because they hate their life and they're not happy with their sobriety because all they have is their drive from alcohol, but their life sucks. So they drink. And if you think it's insane, it is insane. If you think it's suicidal, it is suicidal. You know, if you think it's self-destructive, it is self-destructive, but they would rather drink and try to drink and forget all this than continue to live their crummy, sober life. So if you want to be one of those people, you can be one of those people. You don't have to be rocking in the fourth dimension of existence. You don't have to experience much of heaven. You don't have to hit the promised land or the promises. You have to do that. Do whatever you want to do. It's your life. So here's what it says in Sermon on the Mount. So if you ever get into reading scripture, which is what they were doing, you will find that the Bible stole, the entire Bible was stolen from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's very sad. They plagiarized the whole thing. You know what I mean? I know they think, most people think Bill Wilson wrote the big book. He didn't. He replaced the word sin with defects of character. It's just a whole big thing, you know. A lot of things he had to throw in there, like Good Samaritan and stuff like that. So here it is. It's right here in chat. This is in Matthew 5. Now, you remember what the big book says is, number one, you must get rid of the selfishness. You must if it kills you. God makes that possible. You know, it says that, right? And it also says God either is or isn't. What's your decision going to be? And it says in the 11th step that we've got to get a more conscious contact with God, get closer to Him, see Him. God's got to get to the point where God is realer to you, guys. God has got to be realer to you than the blonde with the good body. Ladies, God's got to be realer to you than the husband you want to have. God has got to be realer to you than anything that'll tear you away from this deal. Your desire to get closer to God has got to be realer to you than any desire you've ever had on the planet for the things of this planet before, or else those things will rip you away and cause you to have depression. If your job is realer to you, your boss is realer to you, the people in your life are realer to you than God, then you will live a sad, sad life. And you'll never get rid of the fear of other people or economic insecurity. And you know, I know something, there's no fear so bad as sober fear. It doesn't feel better. Sober fear doesn't feel better than necessarily drunken fear. You will do something. Maybe it'll just be chocolates, you know, who knows? But the bottom line is, so if you want to get closer to God, because the psychic change, which is caused by God, because by the way, in case I forgot this, you are powerless. And there is, by the way, one who has all power. There's 7.6 billion people on the planet. There's not 7.6 billion gods. There's one who has all power. I know there's one because the big book says, once you make this decision, all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all powerful, he will give us everything. In other words, there's one and he's all powerful. There's not 20 that are all powerful because by definition, there's one that's all powerful. And the one that's all powerful, we call him God. We don't call him G-O-D. We don't call him good orderly direction. That's a mere code, a better philosophy of life. Doesn't work for us because at 3 o'clock in the morning, when you have cancer and you're dying and you're alone, good orderly direction just doesn't fit the bills, buddy. I don't know how to explain it to you. You're going to reach a point in your life where there's going to be some bad shit happening. We're all going to die. You're going to get sick. You're going to get COVID. People are going to die. And let me tell you something. The G-O-D thing ain't going to work for you at 3 o'clock in the morning. You're going to be missing something. So here's what it says in Sermon on the Mount, which was the thing they found absolutely essential. But I tell you, this is the carpenter talking, but I tell you that anyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to his brother, Raca, will be subject to the Sanhedrin. But anyone who says you fool will be, in other words, if you curse out your brother, if you have an argument with him, you do the alcoholic thing. So if you are offering your guilt to the altar, if you want to get closer to God, and there you remember that you have a resentment against your brother and he has a resentment against you, leave your gift at the altar before the altar. Go and be reconciled to your brother. Then come and see me. I don't want to be seeing your ass. I don't want you coming up to me. I don't want the pretenders. I want the real deal. Don't be coming up to me when you've just lashed out at your brother and you have a resentment against your brother. Don't be coming to me to make things all right. You know what I mean? You want to pray to me saying, please give me the courage to make things right with my brother. You fix up that crap with your brother. Then I want to hear from you. You're the guy I want to hang out with. You know, that's who I want to be. Now, listen, you may not like that kind of God. I'm just reading what it, I'm not. And by the way, if this bears somewhat of a similarity to steps 8 and 9 and 4, there's a reason for that. Because the founders, before they wrote the big book, were reading this stuff, and that's what they were doing. And the Sermon on the Mount is just the steps. The steps are just the life set forth in the Sermon on the Mount. I'm sorry, you're entitled to your opinion, just not entitled to your own facts. That's what was going on. So I'm going to end it this way, sort of. So when I got divorced from my wife, my first wife, and I had a 5-year-old son, and he's like 45 now, and I was supposed to take him to the zoo. I had been promising him for weeks to take him to the zoo. Now, this is just one story, but this is really my life. This is who I was. This is who I was. You can call it selfish. You can call it self-centered. You can call it asshole. I don't care what you want to call it. This is who I am. This is who I really am. This is who I really am. I'm not the guy in the office with the diploma. This is me. It's probably not you, but this is me. So I promised my son I'd pick him up at 9:30, 10 o'clock, take him to the zoo. He said, Daddy, really? He says, absolutely, we're going to the zoo. And I want to tell you something. I intended to do it. I honestly intended to do it. And at around 8:30 in the morning, I got a call from Sally. You know, a cute blonde I met the night before at the bar. And she said, Russell, me and the girls are going out on a boat. We would like to invite you along. So now I start thinking, And I'm as sober at 8:30 in the morning thinking about this dilemma as I am right now talking to you. I'm thinking my son, who's 5, 6 years old, who's looking forward to me, standing by the door waiting for me to take him to the zoo, or Sally. My son or sex. My son or booze. My son or the boat. Let me tell you something. I must have debated that for like 15 seconds. And it was anchors away. Anchors away. I was gone. I was out the door. I don't even think I called up my son. I'm thinking, you know, oh, stop it, Cindy. I don't need that crap from you. You know, shaking the head like I'm like, you know, you're so much better, you know. So you remember, I can see you guys on the Zoom thing. You know, you can see all this stuff, this snickering bullshit, you know. So I went out on the boat and I drank, because let me tell you something. You know who lives their life like that? Bums live their life like that. Idiots live their life like that. Ungrateful, selfish people live their lives. And that's what I was. I was a bum in a three-piece suit. And I'm going to tell you something. You live a life like that, you feel guilty. Even if you don't think you feel guilty, because you are guilty. And you may look good on the outside, but on the inside, man, there's a portrait of Dorian Gray that looks like a piece of crap. And you're going to drink. And you know why you're going to drink? Because when you live your life like an asshole, you're going to drink. When you live your life hurting people and doing stupid shit, you're going to drink. That's the deal. That's what's going to happen. And that's what I did. I drank. And I deserved to drink. And I didn't deserve a happy life. You know, you say to yourself, why can't I be happy? Why the hell should you deserve to be happy? Why should you be an asshole all your life and disappointing people and do whatever they want to do? What makes you think you deserve to be happy? Listen, you need to pray. You know what you need to pray for? When you say life is not fair, let me tell you something, folks. The last thing you want is fair. The last thing you want is to get what you deserve. You don't want that. Believe me, it ain't going to be pretty. It ain't going to be pretty. And so I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I want to know, when am I going to be happy? And you know, and deep down inside, if you have that constitutional, what do they say, constitutional ability to be honest with yourself, here's the problem. Every once in a while, you remember every stupid, shitty thing you've ever done. It doesn't go anywhere. It's not like on the planet Mars. So you're lathering up on the in the shower, and all of a sudden you hear this voice, you're an asshole, you ought to kill yourself. You're driving in your car, you hear this, but you're such a loser. You're never going to be okay. Why are you even fooling yourself? You're constantly sabotaging yourself and you're beating yourself up because you're judging yourself all the time. And you don't need people to tell you you're an asshole, you're stupid, because you're telling yourself you're stupid all the time. Always looking for that if only or that thing to make yourself feel better. And that's even when you're not drinking. And that's the true alcoholism. That's the deal you're living with. That's what you're dealing with that doesn't go away in 1 year, 2 years, or 10 years. You know, because you love to sin. You learn to sin. You yearn to sin. You just want to. The bottom line is 10 years sober, you want that new car. 20 years sober, you want that new wife. You want, you need, if only. You just can't get away from the desire to do stupid shit to make yourself feel better fast, because it's so much easier. It's such an addiction to the things of this world, the worldly clamors, such an addiction. And it's just like in your molecules, you know? And if you're an alcoholic, it's even worse. You know, you with me? And there's only one thing that'll tear you away from that deal is, and this incredible desire, this gratitude, like Bill Wilson said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I got to keep talking about and telling other people. Only one thing, and that is to get so close to God that you want to please him. And the only way you can do that, really, to really ultimately do that, is not only do everything they say in the book and the praying, the meditating, church, the whole bit, but you also got to make amends to people. You got to start doing, you got to make him, because he's already said in Sermon on the Mount, he don't want to talk to you unless you're going to do it. He's not interested in the bullshit artists or the pretenders. He's interested in people that are serious. He's not interested in your bullshit. Oh, I'll never do it again. He doesn't want to hear I'll never do it again. He doesn't want to hear I'm sorry. You know, he doesn't want to say, well, you don't understand. It's the woman that made me do it. He doesn't want to hear that. He wants to see you fix up what you fucked up. Does that make any sense? He wants you to fix up what you fucked up and stop doing it. So you go out and you make amends to your son. You make amends to all these people. You do all that stuff. And all of a sudden, you notice down the road that you stop saying bad shit about yourself. Well, every once in a while you get into an argument and you get mad and you say something and then you drive away and all of a sudden you're saying to yourself, I'm such an asshole. There it goes again. There it goes again. You know, I'm such an asshole. But if you're close to God, you know what you got to do. And you go back and you do the 10th step or the whatever, the 9th, whatever you want to call it. I don't care. Some step. The Sermon on the Mount step. You with me? And that's the deal. And you do that over and over again for, I don't know, 25, 30 years, 40 years. It has an effect. It has an effect. It has an effect. It really takes effect. You know, it's one thing when you do it for, you know, a year, when you do it for 5 years, and you live for 10, you know, you do it for 30, 40 years, you know, it works. It has an effect. I mean, really, at 5 years, why should you feel better than me at 40 years? I mean, would that be fair? I mean, I'm just saying, would that be fair? If I do this shit seriously for 40 flipping years, why should you feel better than me after 5 years? That I feel is unfair. Right, Cindy? I think that's unfair. I could be wrong about that. I could be wrong. Don't get mad at me. Okay, that's it. I'm done. It's over.